Okay. Braden, it's all yours.
Great. Everyone's here. Let's call this meeting to order. As far as I know, there are no current conflicts of interest.
Mine
We can.
settled. Finally.
We can establish a quorum with three board members present. Does anyone have a comment on the agenda, or are we ready to move to approve it? Okay, motion
Yeah,
to.
so approved.
Aye.
Aye.
Taryn, you're muted.
Aye, sorry about
Great.
that.
It's approved. Consider approval of the February 12th special meeting minutes. Does anyone have comments on that? I honestly haven't even looked at them.
No, they're fine.
Yeah, I looked at them. I don't have any specific comments.
Okay, great. Thanks for looking at those guys. Motion to approve the special meeting minutes as they are.
So moved.
Move, approve. Aye.
Okay, all in favor, aye.
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 Great. Moving quickly, item five. And before we get to this item on the agenda, I'd just like to share some news with everyone. I'll start with the refunding of the bonds. Our attempt at refunding the outstanding debt did not work out the way this board had intended. Without getting to too much detail right now, we've come to the conclusion that this is not the appropriate time to refinance the debt, but the new board may take a look at it down the road. If these bonds are not refinanced, they'll likely be paid off at their current 6% interest rate in around 10 to 15 years. Rather unfortunately, it took several months to get to this conclusion, and during those months, the district did incur some legal fees. Fortunately, our lawyers at Kager have said they will look at the bills and see where they may reduce our expenses. And now on to some good news. Over the last several days, some board members, residents, and individuals from the recall committee dedicated many hours to extremely productive discussions about the future of our community. These conversations highlighted the diverse perspectives that led up to the recall. And we were able to clear up many of the misconceptions, misperceptions, and rumors that enveloped our community. We agreed that having a whole and united community that is spared of the politics of Metro District Board elections is what is best for the community. And in this pursuit of unity, three residents running for the board, Mark Weiss, Kevin Capra, and Monica Zajac, have withdrawn their self-nomination forms. This decision leaves us with three residents to fill three vacancies on the board, making the upcoming election uncontested. And since we are halting the election prior to the ballots being mailed, we will be saving costs, albeit not as much as not having an election altogether, but some nonetheless. The new board members joining the board will be Steve Schwab, Martha Mortel, and Bill Mickle. And I'd like to emphasize that in these recent conversations, there was an understanding that this new board's pursuits will avoid the community's largest concerns and instead will likely avoid and move past last year's board divide. And to everyone in attendance, this board will have my full support, and I personally value the harmony amongst our neighbors in this community over all else. If anyone has any specific questions, please reach out to me. So, with that, I'd like to have the board consider authorizing the cancellation of the election and declaring the remaining candidates elected. Is there any comments on this resolution or questions from the board?
No, I would agree with it. And I'd like to make one comment too. You brought up fees, Braden. And once we get this election issue decided, I'd like to talk about that just briefly.
Okay, all in favor or motion to approve this resolution to cancel the election and declare the remaining candidates elected?
Aye.
Okay, that's Bob with the second on the motion.
Yes.
Passes. Mr. Norris, can you tell us and everyone in attendance when the new board will take place and what the procedure for them to call their first meeting will be?
Yeah, absolutely. So with the election being canceled, it is just a matter of basically filing some paperwork at this point. So we have the board's direction to cancel the election. Election day itself is May the 6th. So the incoming board members will not be eligible to be seated until May 6th. Then there's a few additional steps until they are actually officially board members. The main one is taking an oath of office. So it's a simple form document that you can either have the board president or another board member administer and sign it in person, or you can take that to a notary and have that signed. And a lot of folks forget this additional step, but you actually have to take that oath of office and have it filed with the Secretary of State. So once those steps are done, then that person is officially on the board. But as far as scheduling a new, the next board meeting, I know that that will be the next, action, I guess, and opportunity for the board to consider some of these new issues coming down the line. It's just a matter of picking a date. So there is a carve out in the open meetings laws for scheduling meetings. So the board members can email each other. You could even do that right now leading up to the election. But that meeting should be sometime after May 6th. So, and one thing I failed to mention, that oath of office does need to be completed within 30 days of in this case, of the election day. So within 30 days of May 6th. So Kristen Herndon in my office, who's handling the designated election official duties, she'll be sending out those oaths of office to the newly elected board members.
The next item on the agenda is a discussion regarding the developer's promissory note forgiveness. This came about from the last audit that was filed in December, and it was an item that was pretty clear to all parties of what it was, but you know, we hadn't had confirmation from District 1's legal counsel that, hey, the developer actually did forgive these promissory notes until March. So that's on this agenda, just to disclose to the board and the community that the developer, you know, forgave these promissory notes. And, you know, these were a source of much confusion and people were unsure who to believe regarding them. And now they are confirmed off the books for good. Joe, do you have anything to say about them, or is that?
No, I mean, that's a good summary. I mean, as I've described to the board previously, even when they did technically exist, they were still unenforceable debt, but this is now confirmation that, you know, that the developer is not seeking to enforce those.
Hey, Braden.
Yes, Bob.
Can I revert back to your reference to fees? Yeah, I
want
to
get this in. Please. Yeah.
Since you brought fees up, I just wanted to tell you personally and thank you for, you know, all of your efforts and diligence and on behalf of residents to try to conserve funds and save money through your, you know, through the bond refi. And I think I am, and also residents are indebted, you know, to your efforts in trying to mitigate these legal fees, you know, which shows, shows your sincere concern on behalf of residents' expenses. I have one concern, however, and I'm in that I'm relatively aware of all of the legal fees that actually began before we even signed and hired CEGR. And it seems that, you know, a lot of these fees have been, you know, have been continued since then, unabated, you know, in spite of your efforts to try and mitigate this. And I don't really want to discuss it in, you know, open session, but it is somewhat upsetting to see, you know, legal fees that just continue on and on and on in spite of someone's efforts. So, you know, we can discuss this in executive session further. And I think eventually, once all of this is mitigated and established, that, you know, these fees are going to have to be, or should be, through transparency, available to residents, because after all, it's their money. So I think we can reach a reasonable result, you know, amicably and justly. But I just want to get that comment in for us to discuss further in executive.
Yes, it will be discussed in executive session. And, I appreciate your nice comments, Bob.
Yeah, well, I know you've done your best, tried hard. So hopefully we'll come to a positive end to this.
Okay. Thank you again, Mr. Marks. And we're going to look at item 7 now. And this was, you know, this is not really Metro District 2, but we have CCG here, and, you know, we've asked them to give us just a status update on Metro District 1's 2023 audit.
It is with the auditor. The information needed for the audit is in the auditor's Dropbox, if you will. We have not been provided an update as to whenever that will be finished. I think the auditors are all a little underwater right now getting everything done, and we've reached out a couple of times, so we're just waiting to hear back on the status of that.
Okay, great. It sounds like this one's maybe moving along a little bit quicker than the last one, but time will tell. Does anyone have any other questions for Celinda or comments on this? Taryn, Mr. Marks?
No. When okay. Celinda, when do you think this will be completed?
I am not sure, Bob, of what the standard turnaround time is. I know, you know, we had such an extended time with the other audit. 90 days, maybe? Joe, does that sound about right? Is there a statutory requirement for it to be done by?
Yeah, the statutory requirement is that it be filed by June 30th. So that is the deadline. If you don't meet the deadline, the county can basically sold. Cause you to not collect property taxes the following year. That's the penalty. But as you know, the last couple of years have been late, and the county has not.
Well, D1 doesn't have property taxes. D2 has the property taxes.
I understand, but they also did not. I mean, they still collected property taxes for D2.
Gotcha.
So anyways, on the books, the deadline is June 30th. So I'm sure the auditors are aware of that. And I would guess that they will be trying to meet that deadline.
And if I can, if I get more information outside of this meeting, because I've reached out to our accountant to see if he actually heard back from the auditor, he's gone for the day probably, but I'll send you guys an email and let you know.
Great. Thank you.
Going forward, are these audits going to be kept up to date? Are there procedures in place right now to keep these audits current so we don't run into this in the future?
I haven't been given
any indication.
My sense is, Bob, that yes, they will move much faster, that there was an issue from the changeover of our last management company, and the expectation that I've been told is that they'll, you know, happen much faster and they're going to be up to date soon.
Yeah, because these are
time will tell.
Yeah, because these are important for budget, you know, budgeting and establishing budgets, etc. So I think every effort should be made.
And also, there's been a lot of confusion and mistrust over them. So hopefully, you know, that also helps. And
yeah, this will end.
Okay, I think we might be ready to move on to item 8, which is discussion regarding House Bill 24-21267 concerning covenant enforcement activities. And this was something that was passed last year, and there's been some questions in the community. I have four questions that I've been given from the community that I would just like to propose and see if our general counsel, who, you know, isn't a covenant lawyer, but is aware of the bill, and see what they can tell us, and if that helps the board and helps the community, that will be great. Joe, do you want to start with a little bit, or do you want me to just ask these questions that I have?
Yeah, I mean, I would say go ahead and ask your questions. We can go through.
Okay. First one is, how does this bill apply to our metro district?
Okay, so the bill generally is a bill that applies to metro districts that are conducting enforcement of covenants. Special districts have had the authority to provide covenant enforcement for quite a number of years. I think it goes back to like maybe 2004. I'd have to double check that timeline, but it does go back quite a ways. Districts have been doing this for a number of years, although traditionally it's usually done by a homeowners association or some other form of owners association. Metro districts have, you know, depending on the community, carried out those activities of covenant enforcement. So this bill doesn't change that in any significant way, but what it does is implement some restrictions and limitations, and actually it does also give metro districts some additional powers in enforcing covenants. So it does not apply to District 2. District 2 is not providing any covenant enforcement actions. So basically, the bill does not apply to District 2 at all. It does apply to District 1, who, you know, it does have the Design Review Committee and is carrying out the covenant enforcement. And, you know, yeah. I don't want to go into necessarily a lot of detail, because there is quite a bit of detail in the bill. But maybe I think that answers your first question. So I'll let you ask your next one.
Okay. And then I have questions too.
Okay. Bob, maybe is it okay if I go through? I only have three more questions. And
go ahead.
If you have questions that aren't on this list, you can ask them after. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's all right.
Okay. Is there anything residents need to do to ensure that this bill is followed, or is someone else responsible for that? That kind of ties into what you were getting to at the end of the last answer.
Yeah, potentially. So the covenant enforcement is obviously between, you know, the property owner, whoever the enforcement action is taking place. So, you know, private homeowner, and the entity that is taking that enforcement action. So, you know, in your community, I guess that would be District 1. So really, that's the nature of that transaction. You know, as District 2 Council, I can't represent any individual person or, you know, any of you. I can't really give you legal advice on what you should do about your personal situation in your personal home. I know there have been, I mean, I'm happy to give some kind of general advice about what districts are doing here, but I just want to get that concept kind of out there from the start. But as far as, you know, what residents can do, obviously you can read the bill and see what it says, what the impacts are. As I mentioned, the bill does have some limitations. So there are, you know, a handful of things that, even if it's written into the covenants, a district can't enforce. So limitations on rules that have to do with display of flags, rules preventing parking emergency service vehicles, fire mitigation, use of a rain barrel or installing solar panels, things like that. Even if it's in the covenants, written in the covenants, a district enforcing them cannot enforce those things under this HB 24-1267. So, you know, you can read the bill, see what those limitations are. But as far as what can you do, you know, you can talk to your own current counsel. You can go, you can get your own legal counsel. You can go to District 1 meetings. You can, I'm sure that Celinda and the CCG staff who is, you know, managing this activity in District 1 is, you know, potentially a resource. And then, you know, you can go to District 1 to ask questions. I think that's about as far as, you know, I am willing to go, because like I said, I cannot advise anybody personally or individually about their specific situation.
Of course, that makes sense. But, you know, one of the other topics from this bill that I've gotten a question about is, you know, it talks about an HOA, and people are wondering if there's going to be an HOA in Fox Hill. And if there is, what's that mean?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the bill does talk, I mean, it does reference HOA or homeowner associations. It does not require that there be an HOA. And the bill does not mandate that there is an HOA in any form, in any way, shape, or form. The references there mostly have to do with the fact that in some communities, covenant enforcement is carried out by HOAs. In others, it's carried out by districts. So it really needs to apply to both. But the short answer is that this bill does not require creating an HOA, and the Fox Hill covenants provide specifically for the districts to carry out covenant enforcement. So
and does this bill require District 1 to do anything that they were other than what they were doing before the bill was passed?
Yes. It requires and Joe, you can back me up on this. It requires a policy to be in place that follows the implementation of this law. So if you keep your eyes on Colorado legislation, just like with the Metro District Task Force and the HOA Task Force meetings that we had a couple of years ago, the legislature is very uber aware of HOAs and metro districts because of constituent complaints. So this law is very similar to the law, House Bill 221137, that has since been modified. So metro districts are a little behind on catching up with that, but trust me, the legislators are going to make sure that metro districts are following some of the same rules that they've put in place for HOAs. So we just have to have a policy in place that outlines the differences between continuous and repetitious violations, what those penalties may be, what rights the residents have if provided a covenant violation, and they have to put some verbiage in their policy, or it's preferred, with the items that Joe just went through, with signs and vehicular parking and things like that that are identified in that, along with zero escaping. So, but District 1 is working towards getting that in place.
Okay. That's all I have, Bob.
Yeah, my questions are, you know, I as I understand, this law was put into action, what, 8 or 9 months ago. And I don't see anywhere in the covenants, you know, where there's a schedule of fines or enforcement protocols, you know, impartial mediators, et cetera. So it appears to me at present, this bill is not being followed by MD1. So
not entirely, you know, true. I'm sorry,
you know, most of these mitigation of these fines, it always seems to me to be at the whim and biased, you know, biased action on MD1.
There's actually a policy in place that has been in place since 2022 that outlines covenant enforcement. There are parts of the policy that are in place that don't align with this
with
bill,
the law.
But
right.
It's not, it's more, and go with me on this, but it's more some semantics. The current policy in place has talks about violations, but doesn't talk about them in the specifics of this new law. And I will say that even though it was signed by the governor in August of last year, or maybe it was signed earlier than that and put into place in August, most attorneys are going with the January 1, 2025, that it would be in place. That's just been kind of the general instead of last August, which is why most of the attorneys provided those policies for the budget hearing meetings, that they could be adopted going into the new year.
Yet I still see nothing in the covenants, you know, outlining these protocols. And as a result,
well, it can't be in the covenants because that would require a big vote to change. But there is a policy that's in place that's allowed.
Are you talking about the DRC guidelines? Is that the policy?
No.
Oh.
The policy actually has your service fees lumped in it with covenant enforcement
that
and such.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. So I have been working with Francis and David O'Leary trying to get that updated policy in place so that we can move forward with covenant enforcement under the law.
Yeah, because that's not happening now. And it, you know, it creates a lot of animosity in the community have these enforcements just kind of wishy-washy, not specific. And at the whim of the developer.
It's very specific. It's very specific because the design guidelines are very specific and the policy is specific to what fines can be charged and all of that. So, and if you don't have that policy that was put in place in 2022, Bob, I'll send it over to you so that you can see that. So it's just that the policy needs to be updated to take into account the things that are mentioned in the law, the signage, the vehicular parking, zero
escape
items.
The mediators and things like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's not in there.
Yeah. So nothing's been willy-nilly as far as covenant enforcement goes that I have seen. But I will tell you that we haven't done covenant enforcement since January 1st because of this new law and because we're waiting on the updated policy.
So Linda, quick question, are every single lot fall into needing to follow the guidelines within, whether it's owned by a builder or as long as it's a designated lot in Fox Hill, I'm asking about the farm, since that's where lot 90.
No, the farm is not part of either district.
So it's stated, it's separate, even though it's a lot number.
That's a good question, Taryn, because, you know, I don't think I have an answer to that question because I've always been under the understanding that the farm is, you know, separate.
Yeah, it may not be. The covenants, I don't know if you're, I may be able to pull this up, but the covenants themselves have a legal description of property.
Okay.
That the covenants apply to, and the farm may be outside of that.
Because otherwise, I don't think Francis could sell it off, you know, like for the roundtable discussions and stuff that we were having, if, you know, that stuff didn't go through, if it was a lot, because
I just always hear it as, a, you know, lot number 90 or whatever lot number it is. So I didn't know if it was considered that or if it's different because it's residential versus, you know, somebody living there, somebody not living there, but there's people living there now.
Oh, on the adjacent house.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Will Joe check on that?
I think he is right now.
I tend to think Joe is correct that lot 93 was somehow separated out. But I think I think that needs to be checked on to make sure.
I mean, I'm trying to pull it up right now, but
I think I read somewhere that it's
not that it's included. Separate.
Yeah.
Okay.
But don't hold up the meeting for this.
Okay, you'll get that answer to us eventually. I just want to make sure that you know that that all of these issues are well outlined in the covenant, so and that they're followed. Because it appears presently they aren't.
All right, then let's move on to item 9, the social committee update.
Sure. We will be starting planning events when the weather changes, hopefully here soon. And there's several new residents that have moved in. So if you're interested in serving on the committee, let me know. But look for that coming out soon. Before that, I want to state something since this is my last meeting. After lots of discussion this weekend with the recall members, or one of the recall members, I felt like we kind of just pushed through the election. I just want to make a statement to make sure it's clear that I am in agreement to move forward and looking forward to moving forward and healing this community. And after lots of discussion with recall committee members this weekend, we all really came to an understanding that litigation is not going to be a driving force of the new board. So I just wanted to state that because I think that's key in some of the misconceptions and topics that were out there. So just wanted to make that statement. Thanks.
Thank you, Taryn. And anyone who's interested in helping plan these social events, you know, please reach out to Taryn and let's get this going and get as many people involved as we possibly can. Before we go into executive session, I just want everybody to know that this is going to be the end of the meeting and there will be nothing acted on after the executive session. It will just be to adjourn the meeting. And that the board was told that there would be or could be substantial savings in refinancing our debt and that we could refinance our debt. And then this changed at no fault of the board. And this is part of what we will be discussing in executive session, just so everyone knows. Right. And just to be crystal clear, don't stick on the Zoom after we go in here because we don't know what time we're coming back. And you know when we come back, it's just going to be motion to adjourn. Done. So with that, you know, motion to move into executive session.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Before you leave.
Okay.
So will somebody reach out to me and let me know whenever you're close to coming out because I have to keep this open. For that matter, I tried to share responsibility and give this Zoom over to Joe, but it wouldn't let me in the setup. So that he could close out the meeting instead, because I may not be sitting here. Yeah. So if you could, somebody could just reach out, Braden, you know how to.
Yeah, I'll text you.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Thanks.
Salinda, I have one question for you.
Yes, sir.
Is it possible to get a draft out of these minutes within a reasonable time to residents?
So they can't. Well, we don't usually send drafts out to residents that haven't been approved by the board.
Because, you know, approval by the board, that's going to be, I mean, we don't even know when the next meeting is going to be.
Bob, I'll send something out as a letter from the president the next couple of days. Is that okay?
All right. Somehow we've got to keep communication open.
Okay.
And let residents know what transpired, you know, within a reasonable amount of time. Even as a draft, anything. I mean, I think, you don't want to send it out as the official minutes because it hasn't been approved, but I think you can send out a draft So that, yeah, something's got to go out. So if you're going to do that, that would be fine.
I can get with you and have you look it over.
Would that go out? Would that go out as a email or as a text, or how would it be distributed?
However you want it to.
Well, we can talk about that.
Okay.
And I'll need to see. And Silinda, the recording.
Mm-hmm.
Will that come to me? Or who will it go
to? I can put that on the website. Would you like me to put it on the website?
Yeah,
the
recording. Please put it on the website.
Yeah, perfect. All right. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
All right. Thank you, everyone. And like I said, we're going into executive session. We'll come back and adjourn the meeting.
Okay.
And board members, you've got a separate meeting invite. So go ahead and leave this current meeting and join the other link.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. I'm off. So we'll go to this one.
No, you need to go off this one first.
It's totally off. All right. There we go.
No, you're still with me.
Oh, how come I'm still with you?
You got to leave this meeting first. There's a should be a leave button down at the bottom right, maybe.
Let me launch it again.
Because you can't launch a Zoom with being in a Zoom.
What's down at the lower right is a there's nothing there.
Oh,
cancel.
Do you have anything that says that's in red with white lettering that says leave?
Nope. I don't see it. Can I just X out?
Maybe. Let me see if I can facilitate. Remove. I'm going to remove you, okay?
Yep.
Okay, here you go. Can you hear me?
I think I just need to make a motion to adjourn the meeting and then vote for it myself since I'm now the only one here.
Yep.
That's because when I kicked Bob out because he couldn't figure out how to
leave.
No,
he's not coming back. He's not coming back.
Oh, okay. Because so I hit remove.
I'll make the motion to adjourn and I vote yes for it.
Okay. Yep. 6-10. Okay.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you, Celinda.
You bet, Braden. Don't be a stranger.
Okay, take
you're
care.
You're still in your thing until May 6th.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, bye, everyone.